You're listening to Investify, preaching financial independence and assisting investors to achieve a more flexible and free lifestyle through smart financial planning and real estate investing. If leaving the corporate world and jumping into this thriving industry is what you desire, tune in and listen to stories of like-minded individuals who made the leap to financial independence.
What's going on, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Invest to Friday. Today, in the news and all over social media and stuff, the big hype is on this NAR settlement. So if you haven't already heard, the National Association of Realtors and some other court case or whatever, basically they came together and they decided that the buyers and the sellers agents have been colluding in order to increase their fees, essentially not acting as fiduciaries of their clients. This came as quite a shock to me because I've always felt that the buyers we represent, we always have their best interest in mind. The sellers agents that I've interacted with always know they have the seller's best interest in mind. And there's quite the negotiation that goes on between the two of us. And so I never even thought to fathom that they would work together to increase fees. However, the court said what the court said. And so now there's these new laws in place about how buyers are going to be interacting with their realtors. And so I want to go over today just a little bit about the rules that changed. I'm not going to go super deep into it because most of you guys here are buyers, you're investors, and maybe sellers. But I really want to focus it on what are the main things that changed, as well as what that means for you as the buyer and how your relationship with your agents is going to change moving forward. And so the two big things that came out of this, the changes are going to be, is that your agent is not going to see what they will be getting paid before making an offer on a property or anything like that. Right now, if we go on the MLS, there's a field that says co-op compensation. And what that tells us is how much the seller is willing to pay the buyer's agent. And if whatever that amount is in the past, we've just accepted it. In our area, it's usually anywhere between 2.5 and 3%. And we just take it as it is. Now, with that change, that field is totally going to disappear. So now the buyer's agent is no longer going to know what they're going to be getting paid. That's obviously somewhat of an issue because nobody works for free. Nobody wants to work for free. And so the buyer's agents are going to have to figure out a way to see what's up. And so we'll talk into kind of the action plans on this going forward. But right now, the changes is going to be, one, the buyer's agent is not going to know exactly how much they're going to be getting paid. And number two is that it's going to be a requirement, a federal requirement, that in order for a buyer to see a house that is listed on the MLS, they must have a signed, written buyer's agreement with the agent showing them the house that details the compensation, that details the exact relationship between the buyer and the buyer's agent before even going to see houses. Those are the two biggest things that is going to be happening here. And so what this really means for you is that you're going to need to do a lot more of your diligence and research up front, because you're going to want to interview two or three realtors, and then you're going to want to sign an exclusive right to buy with a realtor before you even go see a house. Before this whole thing went down, you can go see houses with multiple realtors, and whoever brought you the deal is who you could go with. That's no longer going to be the case. And so you will essentially need to agree and get this thing signed beforehand. At the end of this episode, the last half of this episode is going to be questions that we recommend you ask your realtor. So that way you can make sure you've got the context and the answers you need to make sure that when you commit to somebody, you're committing to the right person. And number two here is the payment to the realtor is no longer going to be assumed by the seller, which means we're not just going to assume in the past the buyer never really paid for the buyer's agent. The seller just paid for it. And that can still be the case. It's all going to be a negotiation, but it is not promised. Now, I will say that if a seller wants to sell their house, they're going to want to pay somebody to bring them a buyer. That's a big part of it. And so if they're going to pay somebody to bring a buyer, they won't get as much for their house if they don't pay a buyer's agent. And so it's in their best interest to pay one. So I'd still say in many cases, you won't need to pay one, but it's not as guaranteed as it once was. And if the market starts to heat up again, then the buyers may be responsible for paying the buyer's agent. And so you just got to make sure that it's the agent's job to make sure they know if they're going to get paid in the transaction or not. But either way, when you sign that buyer's agreement, and if you sign it for 2.8 or 3%, and you go to put an offer in on a house, a big part of that offer is going to be, hey, are you going to pay the buyer's fee or is the seller going to pay the buyer's fee? So make sure that's going to be a very big consideration in a lot of offers now going forward. So yeah, like we said, sellers can still offer it, still pay it. It's totally not much has to change. And yeah, like I said, you can't go around from realtor to realtor. You just have to have an exclusive right to buy with one and make sure they get paid. Now, if you sign exclusive right to buys with lots of different agents and you go through, let's say you get three exclusive right to buys with three agents, that means that you as the buyer were not upholding to the contract. You could then be liable for all three agents' commissions. So you don't want to do that. It's really important that you do your diligence, you pick a realtor and go with that one for that transaction. Now, one way around it is you may sign exclusive right to buys just for a specific property with an individual realtor if you're not sure you want to commit yet. That is another way to do it. But I can almost promise you that a realtor, any experienced realtor at least, is not going to want to waste their time with you. That if you want to just do specific exclusive right to buys for every single property, because it takes time to write those contracts and it takes time to show the houses. And again, that's why it's really important to, if you want the best person on your side, you're going to want to also adhere to the best person, what their practices are, and the best people aren't going to deal with those kind of shenanigans. And again, you got to pick one, decide on a price / agreement, and then make it a go. Another thing here is that when you decide on a price, let's say it's that 2.8 or 3%, that is the amount that the buyer's agent will get paid. There's no going up from there. They can come down to maybe make a deal work, but they can't go up, which means if you agree to 2.8%, but the seller's offering 3%, that additional 0.2% will go back to you as the buyer. And so that's a nice thing as well. So that's what it means for the buyers. As buyers, now it's even more important that you know who you're working with and that they are a good fit for you. And so the questions that you want to be asking your realtor in the interview process just got a lot more important because there's no more trial runs. There's no more doing showings and seeing who you like the best and who you vibe with the most. It's going to be a series of two or three phone calls. At the end of those phone calls, you make a decision. Now, I'm going to go through a series of 12 questions here. I would highly recommend writing these down. I would recommend reviewing these, going back and forth, whatever. But these 12 questions will help you in picking the best investor-friendly realtor. Number one question, keep it kind of light. What are the services that you provide? And so what the answer you want to hear is all the stuff that a typical agent does. So show houses, write contracts, negotiate on your behalf, coordinate inspections, all that kind of stuff. In addition to that, as an investor-friendly realtor, you want them to help you find deals, help you analyze the deals, introduce you to contractors, property managers, have a whole vast network of people. They understand what the rent numbers look like. They've got calculators for you to have, play with, as well as analyze deals with. And so you want the whole kit and caboodle from your investor-friendly realtor. You want all the services that you can provide. Number two, what makes you different from other realtors? And number one, you focus on investments. You can show off your portfolio here. You can show off whatever it is. You can show that you've got calculators and you've got a handful of contractors that have already been tried, true, and vetted, and they're on your team and they're already trusting you. Contractors are like some of the worst things to have if you don't have good ones. Property managers, you've got good property managers. You can guide them through the process. You can understand and look at houses as an investment, not just as a home to live in. So that's a really big thing. That's what separates you apart. Also, maybe talk to your experience a little bit as well. On the FI team, we've helped over 500 investors in the last 4.5 years. There's tons and tons of evidence that we know what works. So why not just go with the people with the most experience? Number three, how many investments do you have? Don't ask them if they invest themselves. Ask how many investments do you have? That's an important question because if you ask them the yes or no question, it's really easy to lie. But if you say, how many investments do you have, they're going to think through, right? And so ask how many they have. They'll tell you. If they don't have at least one, I would keep walking, keep looking. Number four, do you have a team? If so, what role do they play? People are hit or miss on this one. Obviously, as a team leader, I think the experience and the knowledge of having a team at your back is a lot better than just having an individual agent. And so when you've got a team, even if you're working with an inexperienced agent and they've got a team supporting them, you've got the experience of 500 plus deals of clients helped. You've got probably 50 to 100 investment properties within the team that they've done themselves. And then also you've got a team of people using contractors at all different times and all that. And so there's definitely an economies of scale of working with an actual team rather than just working with a solo agent to help you out. And oftentimes you want to ask them, what role do they play and what role does your team play? And so your agent might say, I'm going to be your main point of contact. I'm going to be the one that's going to show the houses to you. I'm going to be the one that's writing the contract. I'm going to be the one that's running you through the initial analysis. And when you go under contract, we can bring it up the ramps. I can bring it in front of the team. We can all analyze the deal together, make sure that it still checks out for what you're looking for. And bada bing, bada boom, that's how everything works out. And so that's what you want. You want a lot of people looking at your deal, not just your one agent. Number five, what are some areas that you like? And so this is you testing the agent on the market. And so they'll probably mention four or five different neighborhoods, jot those down. And as you interview three, four, five, six different agents, make sure that you see where the correlations are. If there's a lot of overlap, those neighborhoods are probably pretty good. If one agent says something unique, you may want to probe and be like, oh, I ask a lot of people that. I've never heard that answer before. Why do you like that area? And then let them give you the answer. Let them explain. Number six, this is a question that is changing a lot now. What fees can I expect to pay? And so there's going to be an inspection fee for, let's just say, $1,000. After the inspection may only be $600 or $700, but then you're going to do a sewer scope and a radon, and you might have an electrician come out, whatever. I would budget about $1,000 for inspections. Then there's going to be an appraisal fee for $600. There's going to be some title fees for $1,000 or $2. And now there's going to be the buyer's fee, the buyer's agent fee. And typically the buyer's agent fees are anywhere between 2.5% and 3%. And sometimes it's a little bit higher. And what you're going to hear now is that you are going to be required to pay this fee. However, in more cases than not, the seller will pay it, or we will get the seller to pay it. But ultimately, going into the agreement, you have to assume that you'll be paying for the fee. Otherwise, you just got to keep searching for houses where the seller is willing to pay the fee. Number seven, do you have any references? Of course, you want people, past clients and all that kind of stuff, to call and chat with and make sure they've had good experiences. Number eight, do you have any off-market properties that you get? Ideally, you want someone that has some off-market properties. Obviously, agents do most of their stuff on the MLS. We do most of our deals on the MLS. I've personally purchased almost all of my deals on the MLS, but we do still get off-market properties a couple a month. And so it's important to have an agent that at least has access to some of those. Number nine, can you help me find other professionals? This needs to be an absolutely. Your agent needs to have a list. We have a list of preferred vendors that we've used. And if I haven't used them myself, then someone on the team has and they can vouch for them. And so it's really important to build up that list and to have a list of trusted professionals that you can use. Now, it's not to say the list is perfect, because we've had tons of contractors that were amazing for a while and then something happened and they started to stink. And so you still want to interview those contractors and all that, but definitely take some from your real estate agent and make sure they've got some to provide for you. Number 10, how often will I hear from you? And so you definitely want to understand the cadence of communication between you and your agent. It probably depends on where you're at in the process. For example, if you're ready to look at houses next weekend, I'm going to text you probably 2 or 3 times over the next week to see what houses you want to look like, to see if you had any questions, if you got the pre-approval letter, if you want to set up time for showings, et cetera, et cetera. However, if you tell me if you're 2 or 3 months out, I'll probably text you once a week just to check in, right? See how things are going, whatever's stopping you from going now to 2 or 3 months from now, whatever that change is. Again, you'll know you want to hear from your agent quite a bit, because it just means they care about you. They want to know about your situation. And if anything changes, they want to know about it so that they can negotiate for you in the appropriate way. Number 11, why are you a good fit for me? Let them pitch themselves again. Now that they know you, know your service, know what you're talking about, you can ask that question. And then 12 is, how do you like to be communicated with? And so ask the agent how they like to be communicated with. Ask the agent, how can I be a good client for you? Because I'll tell you right now, as an agent, and as someone that has done quite a few transactions, hundreds and hundreds in my time, I'll say that there's clients that I really don't like. And if a deal comes across my desk, I am 100% sending it to the client that I prefer to work with versus the client that's a pain in the butt for me. Who do you think I'm going to give the best contractor to? The client that I like or the client that's the pain in the butt? You want to be a good client for your realtor, because then they're going to give you the best of the best. You don't want to be a pain in the butt. Otherwise, communication will lack. They're not going to negotiate for you as hard. They're not going to send you the best people. And they may just totally leave you after the transaction. So be a good client as well. Make sure that you get a good agent. And so that is pretty much it, guys. So just to recap real quick, I'm going to do a 3-minute recap of everything. So the NAR statement, basically nothing has really changed that much. The only thing is that sellers are now more aware that they are not required to pay for a buyer's agent. What this means for the buyers is that you are going to need to get exclusive right to buy signed before seeing homes. You're going to have an agreement with your agent that says how much the agent is going to get paid. And so there's going to be a lot less jumping around from agent to agent. You're going to pick one, you're going to run with it. And as such, because you need to pick one, these are the 12 questions that you need to ask. They are, what services do you provide? What makes you different from other realtors? How many investments do you have? Do you have a team? If so, what role do they play? What are some areas that you like? What fees are you going to pay? Does the agent have any references? Does the agent have any off-market properties that they get? Can you help me find other professionals? How often will I hear from you? Why are you a good fit for me? And how do you like to be communicated with? And so that's it, guys. That's how the things are changing. It's not as crazy. It's not as big as people are making it out to be, but it is a somewhat major change that you're just going to need to be aware of. And so that's my thoughts for today, guys. I hope you liked this episode. If you did like it, please leave us a rating and review, or you can give me a follow. I am the Fi Guy on Instagram, and looking forward to hearing and seeing you guys soon.
That's it for this episode of Investify. We hope that these nuggets of real estate wisdom lead to more savvy financial planning and a clearer path towards financial freedom. For more content like this, subscribe to the show at investify.com. Don't forget to leave a rating and share it with your friends. Together, we can transform more real estate newbies into successful and clever investors. Thank you so much for listening. See you on the next one.